I don't know exactly when it came out, but a little while ago there was a song that got really popular. It was done by a guy named Baz Luhrmann, and the song was entitled "Everyone's Free to Wear Sunscreen." Has anyone heard this song? Okay, Kelly, you've heard this? Okay, all right. So none of you have heard this? Wow. Oh, yeah? When did it come out? That's what I was trying to remember. I should have looked it up. Someone's going to Google it for me right now that you can yell it out when that song came out. But it was essentially based on, and I haven't been able to verify the veracity of where it came from. The story is that it was a graduation speech. And this graduation speech got super popular and everyone thought it was amazing. And it made its rounds on the internet, but then Baz Luhrmann kind of reignited it once again and got it going. And it's all about this speech where the guy gets up and his opening line is, "Wear sunscreen." And he goes on to say that the scientific benefits of wearing sunscreen have been proven. There's a lot of benefits that we can talk to you about. It's all there. Whereas the rest of my speech is nothing more than a bunch of ramblings and observations by me. And then he goes on and he gives out this incredible advice. Some of it is really hilarious. Things like dance the funky chicken at your parents' 50th wedding anniversary. Dance as if no one is looking. Sing, stretch. And of course, I think my favorite line out of the whole thing is, whatever you do, do not read beauty magazines. They will only make you feel ugly. So this is great advice. It's great things to be living on. As we're going through Deuteronomy 24 and 25, that's kind of how I felt as I'm reading through this. I'm like, there's really no overarching theme. There's no way to organize the material. What I have entitled today is that these are commandments of kindness. Like, how do we treat one another kindly? Which is important for God to actually take the time out to make sure that we know how to live is very important. And a lot of the stuff that we have actually shows up in the New Testament in various ways. And they're very, very helpful for us. So as we go through this, I have no great overarching message. I have no way to thematically organize all of this. These are just going to be pieces, not just of advice, but commandments on how we live as people in the covenant relationship with God. Now, if you are not in the covenant relationship with God, then all of these commandments are going to sound really stupid. And that really is how it is. We know that what God does for us and then how we live, the call to live, is really foolishness to the world. People look at it and go, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you live that way? Because the world has a much different metric of success and kindness and how to live. Most importantly, the world says, live for yourself, take all that you can. It doesn't matter if you break into a church and steal all of its tools out of its electrical room or not. Just take everything you can. Sorry, I'm still venting from what happened to us just yesterday and the day before. We had someone break in and stole all our keys, and then we had to rekey some stuff, and they stole a bunch of tools, and then they stole our trailer that we take kids around in for our community Easter egg hunt and our trunk or treat. They came at 4:10 a.m., not last night, but the night before. They hooked it up to their bicycle and rode it right down Chapman Avenue. So if you happen to be out today and are garage sailing and you see a trailer that actually has on the back of it Searchlight Ministries, buy it, please, and bring it back. That would be great. Yeah. So the world tells us that's how we're supposed to live. Take what you get. If you need to take it from other people, take it from other people. The most important person in this world is you, so make sure you live that way. So here are the commandments. Chapter 24, if a man marries a woman who becomes displeasing to him because he finds, something indecent about her, and he writes her a certificate of divorce, gives it to her, and sends her from his house. And if after she leaves his house, she becomes the wife of another man, and her second husband dislikes her and writes her a certificate of divorce, it's clearly something wrong with her. Or if he dies, then the first husband who divorced her is not allowed to marry her again after she has been defiled. That would be detestable in the eyes of the Lord. Do not bring sin upon the land the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance. What's interesting about this passage is the early Jewish people essentially separated into two camps, and they had fights over what does it mean to do something indecent. So if you marry someone and then the guy says, I have found something indecent and you are displeasing to me, then you could write a certificate of divorce. If you remember, this then is what Jesus was confronted with when they asked him the question. Well, and the way they posed it is very strange. They said, Moses commanded us to write a certificate of divorce, which, of course, is there any command in here to write a certificate of divorce? No, that's not how it was. They came from a camp that said you could essentially divorce a woman for any reason. In fact, they give a bunch of reasons. And one of the reasons is if the woman becomes ugly and there is another woman that is prettier, then that woman has become displeasing and it's her fault. And yeah, careful, right? Don't do it, John. Don't do it. You can write that divorce. They could say for anything. They even say that if she's a bad cook, if she puts too much salt on the eggs, you can divorce her because of assault. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jerickson. I greatly appreciate that. Man, that's wonderful. There was then another camp that said the only reason to divorce would be for something like really big and significant. Now, if you remember, what does Jesus do? This is what's helpful because as I was reading a bunch of the commentaries, it was very interesting. Some people were like, well, if the woman, maybe she has something wrong, like that one woman who had a bleeding issue and she wouldn't be able to produce kids. Maybe that's what it's referring to. I think the easiest way to go is just go to Jesus. He helps interpret things for us quite nicely. What is the indecency that Jesus references? Marital unfaithfulness. So it's not if she is a bad cook or if she's become ugly and there's prettier people around. Nope. Jesus says that is incorrect. This is what we're supposed to do. And they pull it from this passage, which isn't even really referencing that as a law, trying to help us understand it. What is this trying to do? This law is actually trying to help and protect women because this is how it happened. If I divorce my wife because something unpleasing, she goes to another guy, he divorces her. If she comes back to me, I have a lot of power now. I can essentially do whatever I want, because she has been now divorced twice, there's probably not going to be anyone that's going to pick her up. And so I can now bring her as my wife and treat her in any way that I want. It was to curb the attacks on women. And you'll see that through a lot of these commandments, they're really trying to preserve women and also making sure that we preserve the dignity of people. So if you wish to do a divorce according to Jesus's interpretation of Deuteronomy 24, it could only be for marital unfaithfulness, and then later on is also added abandonment. God values relationships. God values the family. And we're going to see a couple more of these. The emphasis he puts on making sure that family structures stay strong is important. I know that we've kind of lost that nowadays. We have become a very independent society. Men have become very independent of women, saying they're too much work, They're such a hassle. I'm not going to get involved. Women have also become independent, being able to go into the workplace and survive without a man. And they say, you know what? Men are just too hard to work with. They're too much of a hassle. I'm not going to get involved. Or you get married and you say, you know what? This whole marriage thing is a hassle. This whole marriage thing is a lot of work. And I don't think I want to do it anymore. I think I'll just simply walk away. Well, God says, yeah, it's hard work. Yes, it can be difficult at times. But stay with it. Stay strong, because a marriage unit and a family is extremely important to God. And here's how important it is. Verse 5, if a man has recently married, so he's a newlywed, he just got married, he's excited on what to do with his life, he must, and Vicar covered this not that long ago, he must not be sent to war or have any other duty laid on him. For 1 year, he is to be free to stay at home. Now, why would God want a guy to stay at home for a year without any responsibility, no civic responsibilities whatsoever? Why would he want to do that? Children might be a good answer. I kind of cheated because I stopped reading the verse at a very specific point. Just simply read the rest of the verse. Why does he want this? To bring happiness to himself. Oh, wait, what? Oh, bring happiness to his wife. Oh, guys, what is our job? To bring, oh, yeah, Mike, did you do that? I think you did, right? Yeah, all the guys are like, I hope I did that. I hope I brought happiness. I'm bringing happiness to my wife. That is exact. Now, isn't it interesting? Where's the command for the women? There is none. You know why? Because guys, if we bring happiness to our wife, they will bring happiness to us. In fact, whenever I get into marriage counseling situations, whether it's premarital or marital, I should say, I usually tend to make sure that the guy is taking the lead. If there is misery within the couple, I look to the guy and say, are you bringing happiness to your wife? Right? Chris, are you bringing happiness to your wife? Absolutely. See, that's what I love to hear. Where are you guys at now? Are you still in a year? Yeah, marriage. No, it only counts about marriage. Yeah, the dating stuff is garbage. Yeah, no. So you're still in that year thing. Yeah, Chris, God is specifically, Faith, isn't this a great day for you? God is specifically telling you, bring happiness to your wife. And all the women said, amen. All right. Verse 6, then he switches subjects, which is, again, we're like, we went from marriage, and now we're going to talk about millstones, all right? Is everyone familiar with millstones? These are a very important commodity, not for us, but for back then. You would have an upper millstone and a lower millstone. The lower millstone would be where you'd put all your grain, and then you have an upper millstone that you might tie off to an animal or a donkey, or maybe even run yourself, and you just roll the upper millstone on the lower millstone. And this is what it said. Do not take a pair of millstones, not even the upper one, because the lower one is bigger. So don't take the millstones. Not even the upper one that's smaller. Why? Because if you take away this as security for a debt, that would take a man's livelihood as security. So if Bob comes to me and he's like, Mark, I need $200. I just got to make it through some stuff, and I'm having a real hard time, but, you know, I'm working hard. This is going to be great. I'm like, Bob, that's great. I'll do it. Give me your car as collateral. Right? And then he ends up spending $500 on Uber and Lyft to try to make it back and forth. And I don't take from you in lending processes stuff that will cause you to not be able to pay back the debt. Why? Because we're supposed to be kind and loving to the people around us. So if you do take something as collateral, be careful what you take. There's other stuff when it comes to collateral. We're going to keep on going. If a man is caught kidnapping one of his brother Israelites and treats him as a slave or sells him, the kidnapper must die. Okay, so wait. So what does the Bible say about slavery? Don't. right? There's things in there if there's indentured servanthood, but if someone is found kidnapping and forcing someone to work, you kill them. You must purge the evil from among you. Verse 8, in cases of leprous diseases, be very careful to do exactly as the priests who are Levites instruct you. Why is this important? Why you get it? Anyone here have leprosy? Anyone have a, no? Yeah, it's kind of not around anymore. So what should you be bringing to me as, don't call me priest, I'm a pastor here. What was leprosy a symbol and a picture of in the Old Testament? Picture of sin, and it also is, has to do with a lot of arrogance. The first time we see leprosy shown up, quiz time, trivia time. Miriam, very good. Wow, some people here know their Bible. Miriam, why did Miriam get leprosy? Because she looked at her brother Moses, right? Because sisters and their brothers, right? The sisters look at him, go, brother. Yeah. Why do you get all the special treatment? I'm just as good as you. And God says, be very careful. You're not blurring those boundary lines. And so she got leprosy. Once she repented, she was freed. But make sure if you have this, there's twofold. One, God wants to protect the people in the camp from unhealthy diseases. But also, he wants to make sure that what is ever happening in your life, do not neglect having God be a part of it. That's hard, isn't it? Who here likes to confess their sins? Anyone? I know I don't. It's not a pleasant, enjoyable time for me. I hate saying to God, yeah, here's the areas that I've been messing up in. And what I really hate doing is telling someone about it. But God says, make sure you tell. Make sure you talk. Make sure you're sharing what's going on so that you do not become isolated, and make sure that you don't get picked off by the devil because you're taking yourself out of the camp of God. So make sure you do what they said. Verse 9, remember what the Lord your God did to Miriam along the way after you came out of Egypt. All right, now we get another loan stuff. When you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, do not go into his house to get what he is offering as a pledge. Stay outside and let the man to whom you are making the loan bring the pledge out to you. If the man is poor, do not go to sleep with his pledge in your possession. Return his cloak to him by sunset so that he may sleep on it. Then he will thank you, and it will be regarded as a righteous act in the sight of the Lord your God. So you're getting ready to loan some money to some people. They're like, hey, I'll put up some collateral. You as a person collecting that collateral are not allowed to rush into that person's house and demand certain things from them. Again, a little hard to really understand that nowadays. Most times people with that type of attitude, it's not even done. I'm not going to go in and look through your house and find out what's valuable. But God is making sure, why not entering the house? And this is going to be coming up. This has come up a bunch of times. It's going to come up again. God values your dignity. We miss that a lot. We're going to get just on stuff about beatings. And when you beat people, make sure you don't take their dignity. Isn't that an interesting concept? Even when someone dies because they're cursed by God and they're hanging on a tree, whatever you do, do not let that body hang overnight, because that is disgraceful and dishonoring. Even those who have made mistakes need to make sure that their dignity is preserved. This is what he's doing here. Don't be demanding things. Do not. And then the cloak, right? Imagine the person is so poor, they have literally nothing. And so the only pledge they can give you is literally the shirt off their back. But that shirt off their back was there for several reasons. One, it keeps you warm, especially at nighttime. Two, it often became your bed or your pillow. And God says, if that's the only thing the person has, if they are that poor, make sure you do not keep it overnight. Find them, give it back to them so that they can be taken care of. How does this play out in our lives today? Out of curiosity, if you encountered someone selling some flowers on the streets, And you can tell they're poor. You can tell they don't have a lot. Do you have a tendency to see if you can negotiate because the person themselves is poor? Oh, you're selling me flowers, one bunch for 10. How about you give me 3 bunches for 20? We have, does anyone, we often do that. I do that all the time. Why do I do that? Because they're poor and it's easy to negotiate that way. But when I go to the ranch and I buy a $100 steak dinner, do I negotiate with that person? Wow. You know what? You gave me a steak for $100. How about you give me 2 steaks for $150 and throw in a dessert for free? No, we pay full price and then we leave a good 20% tip. Why? Because we want the rich to like us and honor us. I haven't done it yet, but after reading this, I was very convicted on it, and I'm gonna attempt this at some point. If I'm encountering someone that is selling something, you can tell that they're down on their luck or they're poor, or maybe when we're in another country and you're doing a lot of haggling, I'm gonna try it where I'm gonna say, oh, it's one bunch for 10, and I'm gonna say, how about 2, 3 for 20, and then I'll give them 40 and see what happens. Because that's, does God want us to be generous to the poor or generous to the rich? Generous to the poor. He wants us to love them and care for. Why? Because of God. And God sees that. Now, by the way, you're not going to get anything out of a poor person, are you? That it's going to give you no status. You're not going to get, you know, a good write-up in the paper. No one's going to really care except for God. And I think that's more important. So when you treat people, make sure that you are not taking advantage of poor people. It goes on, verse 14, do not take advantage of a hired man who is poor and needy. Do you see the theme here? Whether he is a brother Israelite or an alien living in your towns, pay him the wages each day before sunset because he is poor and is counting on it. Otherwise, he may cry to the Lord against you, and you will be guilty of sin. It's very easy. We can still do it nowadays, right? I can drive down to Home Depot today, and I can pick up people that will work for me during the day. Now, they're not protected by anything. They have no assurances that at the end of the day, I'm going to pay their wage. And if I don't pay their wage, what can they do about it? Probably nothing. Oh, the temptation is there. No, God says when we're treating people who are not doing well in life, the ones that are easy to take advantage of, do not do it. God calls us to treat the poor and the destitute, the widows and the orphans, the ones that are our brother Israelites and the aliens living within our land, to treat them with kindness and love. Again, it's countercultural. There's easy ways to take advantage of them. God says, don't. Verse 16, we switch subjects once again. This, I think, is an important one because it actually is relatively contradictory to another commandment that we had just covered not that long ago. It says, fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor children be put to death for their fathers. Each is to die for his own sin. And we're going to get it a little bit later on, too. Something semi-contradictory is going to be coming forward. So, let's say you come to find out that I am a secret serial killer. Ooh. The temptation then becomes, how much did I influence Mark Thomas? Or Jacob? He's kind of shifty at times. It's not going to be Josh. He's way too nice, right? Josh doesn't like to kill anything. He's like, come on, little ants, let's get out of the... But it happens. Recently, I actually just watched, did you see there's that documentary, I don't know if it's still out, I think it was on Netflix, and it was all about the cult where they drank the Kool-Aid, Jim Jones, Jamestown, yeah? You not heard that? Yeah, so there was this guy, he was very, very charismatic. Everyone loved him, kind of like how much you love me. And, no, you don't, you're like, boo. And what he did was he took a bunch of people and he went down to South America and essentially it was a cult. It was this big cult, and somehow or other, he convinced people we should all drink Kool-Aid laced with cyanide and all die because that would be a proper thing to do. He was being surrounded by a lot of other things. There were senators that had come down. Someone had actually gotten killed already. It was all starting to unravel. Now, what was really interesting was the interviews they had with his son, because his son was a part of it, right? Just like Mark, Thomas, Jacob, and Joshua are a part of the ministry that I've done. Maybe they don't know any better. Maybe they don't know that I'm going crazy and wacky. Should the sins of the father be poured out onto the children? No. How about the other way around? Let's imagine, I don't know which child. We'll do Joshua. Say Joshua actually did become a serial killer because he's acting nice all the time. So maybe he's hiding something. And so he goes out, and what happens when a child does a mass sin? What's the first person you look at? The parents. We do this, don't we? Yeah? Kid goes in with daddy's gun and shoots places up. What's the first thing you do? Arrest the parents. And we've got to be very careful about this. Now, there's this balance that shows up, because in some places, the sins of the father are going to be visited upon the sins of the children, sometimes even down to the 10th generation. Remember, we were talking about that, the exclusion, because the sins of the Amalekites and the Ammonites, we're going to even get to some other, get repeated again. And it's a reminder, hey, these people have been taught, and so there should be some level of connection between what a father and a mother teaches their children, but don't become black and white on that and simply judge people, judge family members of sinners. And don't worry, I do this really well. If you come to me and you tell me you're a sinner, I will just lay all of God's wrath completely on you. It will not visit your children or your parents. But this is a reminder that we've got to be very careful how we treat these things, because everything... I've always worried about my kids. I don't know if you know this, because what typically happens to pastors' kids? They are wild. I know, it's because I'm actually looking at a couple of pastors' kids that are not wild, right? Sue and Deborah are pastors' kids. You're wonderful. How did you escape that? But I don't know. I've watched Footloose. And that daughter of that pastor was pretty bad, right? I've always worried about it. I'm thankful for my children and what they did and how they're living. But do you visit upon a sinful father how their kids turned out? Have you ever seen families torn apart because kids decided to go their own way? Or kids went their own way in a good way and the parents did not? I see it all the time. We've got to be careful that we're not ascribing sin to someone who is only tangentially connected. Verse 17, once again, it gets it back into this pledge thing, do not deprive the alien or the fatherless of justice, right? That's why I chose the song, The King is Calling, right? He's a God of justice, right? But he's also a God of mercy. And that's what's amazing as you read through this. Do not deprive the alien or the fatherless of justice, or take the cloak of a widow as a pledge. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you from there. That is why I commanded you to do this. I'm shocked at this, to be honest. I don't know how many times I've had people who have come to me because they've done some terrible things in their life, and after they've committed those terrible things, they come and they seek forgiveness, and I speak to them the full grace of God over them, and I tell them of the mercies that he has, and that they are not outside the boundaries of God's love, and they usually go away just, you know, free and feeling amazing. Sometimes those people turn out to be the most judgmental people I've ever met when it comes to sinning inside the church. I'm shocked at that, because why? What has God forgiven you of? And what has he forgiven me of? And pastors are probably the ones that are most prone to this, and I hope that I don't ever fall into that category. But let me tell you, I am a sinner of the worst possible kind. So when you come to me and tell me your sins, please, I'm not going to be like, wow, what is wrong with you? I'm going to be like, yeah, we're all a bunch of idiots, aren't we? And how thankful we are of the grace and mercy of God. So before you get too judgmental of your friends who are doing wrong things, or your kids who are possibly straying, or your parents who are a bunch of idiots, remember what God has done for you, and never forget that grace. And then 19, he gives these wonderful gleaning rules for the poor and needy. When you are harvesting in your field and you overlook a sheaf, do not go back to get it. Leave it for the alien, the fatherless, and the widow, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat the olives from your trees, do not go over the branches a second time. Leave what remains for the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. When you harvest the grapes in your vineyard, do not go over the vines again. Leave what remains for the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. This is what I command you to do this. We actually see probably one of the most beautiful examples of this happens in probably one of the most beautiful little books that are around in the Bible, which is the book of Ruth. Ruth is someone who has lost her husband, lost her father. She's now doing stuff with her mother-in-law. Apparently, they got a great relationship, and they love each other. And they find out that there's this guy, and his name is Boaz, and he seems to be a righteous and upright man. Boaz becomes an example for all of us. Ruth comes and is gleaning, and it's amazing. I just love the picture of love, because Boaz is seeing Ruth and she's gleaning on the edges of the fields, because that's what you do. And he looks out and he goes, wow. Now, how do you think Ruth is looking at this point? After a full day of grabbing the kernels in the edges and the grapes that are left behind, she's probably sweaty and gross and disgusting. And Boaz is like, wow, who is that? He's asking his foreman and his friends, and they talk about this, and he ends up wanting to take care of her and love her. And so what does he do? He instructs his workers, hey, when you're walking along, if you happen to drop a little bit of extra, that's fine. Make sure Ruth is behind you. If anyone touches Ruth or treats her rudely, you will be punished and taken out. She will water with my family, not with anyone else. And he saw this vulnerable person and took care of her and loved her. And I loved especially the time that they were sitting around and eating, and after they had gone kind of on this first date, guys, you ready to write this down for all my guys who are single or dating, right? Here's what you do. He says afterwards, I'm going to give you all this food. It's like I've gone to the restaurant and we're taking some leftovers. And you know what Boaz does? He gives extra food for Ruth's mom. Gentlemen, if you are out on a date with your girl and she's going to be going home to her mom afterwards, just buy an extra dessert, put it in a little thing, say, take this home. This is dating advice from Scripture. This is good stuff. Be kind to the alien, the fatherless, and the widow. Our job is to be generous, not selfish. Here we go. This gets a little bit difficult. When men have a dispute, they are to take it to court, and the judges will decide the case, acquitting the innocent and condemning the guilty. If the guilty man deserves to be beaten, the judge shall make him lie down and have him flogged in his presence with the number of lashes his crime deserves. Ouch. Is there any mercy? Like, if you do something wrong, should you face the consequences of your actions? Oh, yeah. Where's the mercy in that? Check out what it says. But he must not give him more than 40 lashes. If he is flogged more than that, your brother will be degraded in your eyes. Which is why it's very fascinating. How many times did our good friend Paul receive the 40 minus 1 lashes? 5 times. It was meant to make sure that there wasn't an over disciplining. This helps if you have children, especially young ones. What was that? Yeah, the Romans also, but they also followed this whole thing of the lashes because, yes, the Romans actually adopted this whole idea of the 40 lashes. There was essentially this mercy. Why the Romans adopted, I have no idea. But it's fascinating, and 5 times Paul received it. Did Jesus receive this? Yeah, he received it at his flogging too. It's designed to make sure, have you ever been in a situation where you get so angry because someone's wronged you and you just want to lash back and be uncommensurate with the action? Yes, yeah, let me tell you, when I found out, Paul, I don't know how you feel. Paul was the one that built the trailer that we had. When I found out that someone stole the trailer, I was like, I'm going to drive around to every single garage sale. And if I find that guy, right, and then what does my mind do? Starts to wander to the worst possible things. And yet, even in the midst of that, God says, be very careful. We don't over-punish, and we don't let our emotions get into it, because even prisoners, even wrongdoers, deserve mercy, deserve dignity. It's hard for us, but hopefully you see that if you ever have to give discipline out, especially if you've been the one that's wronged. If you're a parent, you feel your child is completely out of control and they're not living right, and what do you want to do? You want to punish them. You want to punish them hard. Or maybe you're in a relationship and your boyfriend just dumped you and you're like, I want to get back at him and I'm going to do all this revenge stuff, and we want to go back and it's not commensurate with the crime. We've got to be careful. Even in the midst of people doing stupid, dumb things, God has mercy. You know why I know this? Because guess how much I have been punished for the sins that I've committed? Not very much. Because God is good and God is great and he forgives my sin. Do not muzzle an ox while he is treading out the grain. Paul takes this up a little bit later on. What does this mean? Don't take a cow or an ox that's doing work and he's like going to stop and get a little snacky poo. And Paul says later on, make sure you take care of your pastors. Do not muzzle me. If I am treading out the grain and I'm giving you words of amazing wisdom, you may not hold up a sign that says, you're going really long now, please stop. That would be muzzling me. And that's my application. You can probably take it for what you want. Here we go. This is, if brothers are living together and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. This one's really tough because we really don't do this nowadays, right? Like, otherwise, you're going to marry someone and be like, I need to make sure that the family's good looking, because if you die, I got to marry a sister, or I got to marry a brother that's going on here, and that could be problematic. The reason why this was important was because everything revolved around the family. We don't really have that nowadays, do we? And I think it's slightly unfortunate. God's value of family systems and how important they are. And we do have an example of a guy that didn't fulfill this. Good trivia night. Anyone remember his name? His name was Onan. He said he was going to, his sister-in-law's, the brother's dead, and so he goes and is with her, but decides to practice a level of birth control where you simply pull out early. It worked, and this guy did not fulfill his vow. It's called Onanism. Don't look it up. You're going to end up on some really funky websites, I'm pretty sure. So not much that we can do with that today. Did it also pass the Yeah, the idea behind that, yeah, is, you know, let's say, you know, Heather and I married, and before we had kids, you know, three strapping young men, I die, then to carry on that, my brother, or I'd have to probably, I don't have a brother, I have two older sisters, I'd have to find a near relative to carry on that family name. To carry on the family name is super important. So then that guy would then sleep with Heather, and if produced a male offspring, then that male would have all the rights of the Manning clan and continue on in that. All the wealth, my millions of dollars that I've got stashed away, because you have not muzzled me as an ox and allowed me, and just given me. There might be another sin involved in this, but this also gets important because this also ties back into Ruth, right? Know that story? Here we go. However, if a man does not want to go marry his brother's wife, oh, I don't like her. No, please don't. If a man does not want to marry his brother's wife, she shall go to the elders at the town gate and say, my husband's brother refuses to carry on his brother's name in Israel. He will not fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to me. Then the elders of the town shall summon him and talk to him. This is called peer pressure. If he persists in saying, I do not want to marry her, his brother's widow shall go up to him in the presence of the elders, take off one of his sandals, spit in his face, and say, this is what is done to the man who will not build up his brother's family line. That man's line shall be known in Israel as the family of the unsandaled. Right? Yeah, this is great. But this actually does happen, right? Do you remember in Ruth, right? Ruth is like, hey, Boaz, you kind of cute. Boaz is like, yeah, I think you're kind of cute. I'm a little old and haggard, but, you know, wow, that's amazing. But there's actually a relative that's closer in age to you, Ruth, than me. And so they go and find him to fulfill all righteousness. And they get to him, and he's like, I got a wife. I don't think you're going to be happy about this. And so what does he do? Pulls off his sandal, hands it off, and Ruth and Boaz are free to marry. Hard to, what's the application here? No, there's no marriage things that help us in that. But it does talk about how important it is, the family structure. Verse 11 and 12 has been, for many years, my favorite Bible passage. So it's very fun that I actually get to cover this passage. Now you're like, what? What does it say? If two men are fighting and the wife of one of them comes to rescue her husband from his assailant and she reaches out and seizes him by his private parts, you shall cut off her hand. Show her no mercy. What's the application on that? Well, there still is dignity, right? Like, do we still have rules of engagement and things that are fair in a fight? Right? And one thing, like a guy can be the strongest man in the world, but there is one place that he has an Achilles heel and it's not his heel. And this becomes something where this woman decides to step in between this fight and end the fight unfairly. No, be dignified. Don't be doing that, ladies, okay? If I hear of this next week, we shall bring the table out here. I'll bring my machete. We shall cut off your hand. Right? Yeah, what if they, they bring back the trailer, man? John, you really like that one. I could hear you chuckling. No. Yes. That's the thing, because why should I forgive that? Because what has God forgiven of me? Way worse stuff than that. Show mercy and show grace. It's incredible. All right. We're almost near to the end here. Do not have two differing weights in your bag, one heavy, one light. Do not have two differing measures in your house, one large, one small. You must have accurate and honest weights and measures so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God has given you. For the Lord your God detests anyone who does these things, anyone who deals dishonestly. So this is, you know, we'd go to sell something, right? And, you know, we'd pull out the weights, and I'd have some weights that would be more favorable to me and less favorable to you. And maybe you're poor, and maybe you're not savvy, and maybe you're unaware of that. If you are a business person and you deal dishonestly in your business, God sees this. I don't like it. I know every time I go to the gas station, there's that nice little sticker that's on there. What does that sticker say? This place has been inspected by some government agency to verify that what is being done is true, right? And then when we go to Las Vegas and we pull that slot machine, I don't think we pull slot machines that much anymore, but you pull the slot machine, you're thinking to yourself, are these people cheating me out? They probably are rigging the system against me. But no, you've got the Nevada Gaming Commission that will come and destroy them. Why do we have all these rules that are there? Because fundamentally, you and I are dishonest. Fundamentally. We want to do things for our benefit, not yours. And God says, make sure you treat others with kindness. Make sure you treat each other fairly and good. Don't be trying to take advantage of people. And then, verse 17, remember what the Amalekites, this is going to be a hard paragraph to end on. So I'm just prepping you now. Because you're going to hear it and be like, wait, I thought these were commandments of kindness. And then we got, you know, chop off her hand, show her no mercy. And then we get this Amalekite thing. Remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt. When you were weary and worn out, they met you on your journey and cut off all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. When the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land he is giving you to possess as an inheritance, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. It's one of those things that gives us, we have mercy and we have grace, but we also have justice and truth. And this is one of those things where later on, God was saying, hey, this group of people, they are of the worst possible kind. They are people who pick off the weak. They target those who can't help themselves. And you need to make sure and deal with them properly. And it's a reminder for you and me, how we treat the poor is important. How we treat those who don't have anything is important. How we treat the vulnerable is important. Our business practices, our dealings with others. And if that guy shows up with our trailer, I will invite him to church. And then you can all throw rocks at him.